Good morning. We're opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue, Tuesday, April 30th. We will do our agenda not in the order in which it's printed. We're going to start with Senate Bill 523A, then move back up to the first printed agenda item, and then back down to 3 and 4. I'm opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 523A. Senator Johnson.
And Lifeline.
That's a shaming bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Betsy Johnson, Senate District 16. I appreciate you taking this out of order. This is a very simple bill. A couple of weeks ago, all of us wrote great big tax checks, and there are a group of scofflaw Oregonians who don't find this civic obligation compelling and don't pay their tax bills. And so this bill will allow DOR to post taxpayers, delinquent taxpayers, above a certain level. I've negotiated with DOR that level so it doesn't put an undue burden on them. But it is an attempt to try to collect money due to the state of Oregon. The estimated take from this bill would be about $2 million, although that's speculation at this point. Ms. Mack is here to answer any technical questions, but this is a pilot project that will simply post the names of those people who don't feel compelled to honor their civic obligation to help pay for services and programs.
Thank you.
For the record, Deanna Mack, Department of Revenue, and I'm just here to answer questions for you. This bill is actually based on our pilot project that we ran in 2016. It would make that permanent, just to clarify. So we actually would have worked with Senator Johnson to make this bill so that the criteria that are listed in the bill allow us to automate business rules in our return processing system to be able to generate this list in an automated way. So there's very little fiscal impact to us as a result.
Thank you. Questions? Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for both for being here. So would it just be individuals or businesses also? Kind of where are you drawing the line on that?
Madam Chair and Representative Smith Warner, this is also for withholding tax debt. So the department, it's really any tax debt that is owed that's over $50,000, including if the debtor is a business, we'll post the business name. And if there has been someone who's been held personally liable, personally responsible, then that person's name would go as well. Not their actual direct address, but their general location so that people can be sure they're looking at the right person.
We also, Madam Chair and Representative Smith Warner, have a mechanism to get the names removed when the tax obligation is satisfied.
Yes, okay. Thank you.
Representative Rushkey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Senator Johnson, for this and Deanna for testifying. You said that this is making a pilot project permanent. What were the results of the pilot project? So was revenue brought in? Did the public shaming work?
Madam Chair and Representative Rushkey, I think that, let me see if I can find my results there. I think it might be in Kate's summary too. We posted in our original pilot, we only posted 50 personal taxpayers, personal income taxpayers, and 50 business taxpayers for just withholding debt. And I believe we collected about $420,000 in additional tax through through voluntary means. We also got some garnishment payments, but we don't consider those necessarily as a result of the posting of them online or the threat of posting them online. Because that's really where states report there's the most bang for your buck is the threat of being posted. They come forward and liquidate and find assets that they were otherwise not letting us know about.
And just yes. To follow up, thank you, Madam Chair. So were there any lawsuits that were brought forth? Did people say, you can't do this, or any litigation?
Madam Co-Chair and Representative Rushkey, no, there was not.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you for being here.
Thank you for your accommodation.
There's no one else signed up to testify on Senate Bill 523A. Did you have anything you wanted to add?
I don't think so. I heard the impacts.
All right. Thank you. We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 523A. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 3062A.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Representative Marty Wilde from House District 11. Climate change now forces us to severely reduce our use of carbon. Fuels based on biogenic carbon can provide a cleaner alternative to fossil fuels. The Oregon road tax exemption on diesel fuel containing at least a 20% blend of used cooking oil derived used cooking oil derived biodiesel sunsets at the end of this year. Since we've had this tax exemption for Oregon consumers, we've saved more than 20 million gallons of petroleum diesel. The program has substantially improved access to biodiesel in Oregon, making Oregon the largest concentration of retailers offering high blends of biodiesel. The exemption applies at the point of sale. As the exemption applies at the point of sale, the consumer will be the primary beneficiary. This is not a tax credit going into the pockets of one or two businesses. The exemption makes low-carbon fuel cheaper than petroleum diesel at the pump. And we know that cost often prohibits consumers from making more environmentally responsible choices. The bill before you today will extend the program for only one more year to bridge the gap until, hopefully, House Bill 2020 goes into effect and we're under a new regime. I thank you for your time, and I hope you will forward House Bill 3062 with a due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the representative? Thanks. Before we take testimony, from those who've signed up, Mr. Nalick, do you have anything you would like to describe for us?
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, the measure in front of you primarily started in the 2013 session. This basically allows for the mix of diesel with biodiesel of 20%. 20% biodiesel derived from cooking oil. This is a tax expenditure measure, and I included in your packet two pieces of information in addition to the SMS, and those primarily the evaluation from the Department of Revenue and the tax expenditure. That's 3.004. Their estimates of the tax expenditure itself, and then the revenue impact statement from the House Bill 2435B. This is what started the program in 2013, and our estimate at that time, intended policy of the tax expenditure at that time is to encourage that, and obviously from the tax expenditure book you would see that the achievement of the policy have actually surpassed our expectations by far. At one point we were expecting something in the neighborhood of about $1.2 million, and then it primarily became about $11 million or so. So that's what I have for you.
Thank you very much. I will call people who've signed up to testify, and you can all come up together if you like. Lila Leathers, Brent Leathers, Ian Hill. And you can speak in whichever order you like.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chair Nathanson, co-chairs Finley and Marsh, and members of the committee. My name is Lila Leathers, and I am president of Leathers Oil Company, Leathers Enterprises. And my family and I own and operate 25 retail stations in the state of Oregon for the past 60 years. After passage of the original bill providing state tax exemption for used cooking oil, B20, our company was perhaps the first to test the market statewide. That was right about 5 years ago as we converted our first station in late February of 2014. The notion of educating and convincing the diesel motoring public about B20 biodiesel was a scary prospect, about as scary as this is today. Anyway, We quickly learned that most of our customer base was not aware that they were already using B5, and we repeatedly heard, I won't use that biodiesel stuff in my engine. However, the state tax exemption was the reason that we believed that the program would work. We created and handed out brochures to our customers so that our attendants could help educate them. And then in the winter time, of course, there's a change in the, I don't know what it's called.
Winter chemical?
In the chemical. And so you have to add some additive to help it keep from gelling. So we created the second little brochure for them. We also reduced our pump price to reflect the tax exemption so that our street price was between 25 and 30 cents per gallon below the traditional B5 diesel price. We believe that was the legislature's original intent that the customer and consumer would experience the incentive and savings of the tax exemption. We continued the policies of education and reduced price throughout the last 5 years. There is a large contingent of the consuming public that is better educated, and they in turn will educate their peers. To discontinue this program will undo a lot of the gains that have been made in establishing and educating consumers on an important low-carbon fuel alternative. The state of Oregon is about to spend a lot of money and or tax businesses to do likewise to target low-carbon energy alternatives. Why undo a successful example of such a program that has already proven to work? Thank you for listening to us today.
Thank you for your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson, co-chairs Finley and Marsh, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ian Hill. I'm co-founder of Sequential. I want to state our support of House Bill 3062. I would also like to thank the committee and its members for this opportunity to testify. In particular, I would also like to thank Representative Wilde and Representative Holvey for their work in support of this policy. I've submitted a two-page testimony in written form. I won't make you suffer through me reading that. I think one of the main points beyond what has already been raised that I would like to illustrate to the committee is if we look north to our neighbors in Washington State, where we do not have a similar type person piece of policy in place, the availability of biodiesel is limited to two or three stations in the entire state of Washington. And while here in Oregon, we have 90 plus stations where you can buy 20% or higher blends of biodiesel. And that's not entirely attributable to this piece of policy, but it is largely attributable to this piece of policy. We've worked hard with the legislators over the last year and a half, to see if there was a possibility to use some of the revenue from the transportation sector under a cap and trade bill, if that were to be passed, to support and continue incentives that are oriented towards consumers, such as this piece of policy. We haven't been successful in doing that yet, but are still actively working and hopeful that there's an opportunity for that down the road, if indeed cap and trade is passed and put in place. Again, my name is Ian Hill with Sequential. We're in support of HB 3062 and greatly appreciate your the ability to provide testimony today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson and members of the committee. My name is Brent Leathers, and I'm general manager and part owner of Leathers Fuel. So this is my mom that spoke previously, just to connect the dots for you. We believe pretty strongly, being an early implementer and pretty heavily involved in making this thing work at the retail level, that this biodiesel tax exemption works, and we believe it's proven itself. And particularly where the street price is, the retail price is lowered to reflect the tax savings. It provides the reason for consumers and delivery truck drivers to try a different fuel. It encourages individuals to research renewable biodiesel options. It promotes understanding of the generally equivalent performance characteristics of different biofuels. And it overcomes much of the negative history that's associated with biodiesel from the past that was poorly refined. The state of Oregon's in the process of changing the incentives and or penalties associated with various energy sources, with the emphasis on favoring low carbon energy products. A lot of money will be expended through new taxes and or disincentive policies. This used cooking oil biodiesel bill, which is now expanded to include other biodiesel sources, has cost the state very little in the overall scope of expenditures to emphasize low carbon fuels. Those of us that chose to invest significantly in this program by installing new underground storage tanks, new dispensers, new product lines, invest in winterization chemicals, et cetera, to make the product work on the street. And we also invested in, as Lila relayed to you, a lot in public education. We believe the program's been proven a success by changing consumers' purchasing decisions and just generally promoting education about biodiesel. We ask that you sustain the program for another year to secure the gains that we've all made in consumer education and behavior, and as other energy legislations crafted and adopted this year and next, to figure out how this biodiesel incentive will fit with those policies. Thanks for your time today.
Any questions? There are no questions for you. Ms. Leathers, if you would like to have your testimony added to the record online, you can give it to someone at this table over here, and they'll make sure that we add it. We do have a letter from Sequential, and we will get that added to the record. And if you'd rather not have it added to the record, public record online, I individually would at least like a copy of your notes.
Thank you. I will be happy to leave. Okay. The young man said I could leave it with him.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll leave my examples, two of our educational material.
Great.
We had given them all out, so we didn't have any left to bring the original, but thank you very much.
Well, that's good news if you're continuing to distribute them. That's a good thing.
Well, I wouldn't want to buy something if I didn't know a little more about it, so thank you.
Thank you all for being here. There is no one else signed up to speak on this bill. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 3062A. Opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 215A.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 215A is the regular, what we call a revisor's bill. It's actually put together by legislative council, and it is strictly technical changes, including things like adjusting grammar and syntax. And Leg Council, I'm expecting to come through the door any minute, and there he is.
You're really good.
So this is a bill that the Leg Council actually kind of tracks and builds throughout the interim. And it is purely a technical change, correction kind of bill.
Great.
Yes. For the record, I'm Ellen Dale, Senior Deputy Legislative Counsel. Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, would you like me to walk through this bill?
Yes.
So I didn't
but hear. But not reading every single word.
Oh,
just.
No.
Thank
it
you.
Won't bear it. So. Section one, the point of this is that this series, 358-480 to 358-545, is a special assessment. So it's simply having it listed as a partial exemption is in error, so we correct it. That applies to section two also. Sections three, four, five, and six remove from ORS references to a deleted federal program, the FASIT. And finally, the section seven. In this case, this amended section, 315.506, used to be in a series in chapter 285C, which had all the applicable definitions. So when it was renumbered, It got separated from its definition, so we just put them, all the applicable definitions from Chapter 285C here.
Good.
That's it.
Questions? Thank you for taking care of the details for us so that we can get it right.
And not boring you with them, right? Thanks.
Is there anything else we need to discuss on this bill? I'm closing the public hearing on Senate Bill 215A, opening a hearing on Senate Bill 718.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 718 comes from the tax court. And in brief, it basically updates the proof of filing with the tax court to include methods beyond the Postal Service. And it would apply to filings mailed or transmitted on or after January 1, 2020. And I believe Judge Manicki is here to walk you through the details of this one.
Good.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Robert Manicki, and I'm the judge of the Oregon Tax Court, and there's only one judge. Therefore, I'm also the administrative head over there, and that's what brings me here today. Thank you, first of all, Chair Nathanson, for coming over and visiting us last December. And with that, I'd like to extend an invitation to all members of the committee. If you have 15 minutes or so, we're just on the other side of the railroad tracks behind you in the Robertson building, and we'd always be happy to show you the court and talk with you about what we do. We, of course, are the court responsible for adjudicating cases in that involve the tax laws of the state. Therefore, we look very closely at the words that you produce and the context in which you write them. And often we tune in to hearings like this, including on old reel-to-reel tapes, and listen to what is said in these hearings so that we can discern your intent. We truly hang on your every word and are happy to show you around if you like. This bill is kind of a bringing up to date bill. It would primarily affect the magistrate division of our court, which is where almost all cases begin. We're a statewide court, as I said, and we have only one location here in Salem. And that has significance because when taxpayers, who are the ones mostly filing complaints, want to file something with us, it's not so easy for them, especially in remote locations, to hop down to their county seat and file something in person. They have to get it here generally by mail. And another key fact is that the deadlines for them to file a complaint range from 30 days to 60 days to 90 days in almost all cases. So they're very tight deadlines in which they need to get something filed. State law addressed this back in 1975. We have a statute from that date that says that the date that a complaint is mailed through the U.S. Postal Service is the date of filing. And that lets everybody relax and be confident that the date of the postmark is the date of filing for purposes of those 30, 60, 90-day tight deadlines. We know when something has been filed because we track it to the date that it was mailed. So far, so good. But since 1975, there have been some changes in addition to e-filing. Most people who file complaints in our court still want to file by mail or using paper, and yet it's hard for people to get to the post office during the post office's limited hours. Courier services like FedEx and UPS have been around since the 80s, but our statute hasn't kept up. So the purpose of this bill, the main purpose, is to afford to people who use courier services the same certainty of their filing date that persons who file by mail get today. So the main purpose of the bill would be to say that the date that you dispatch your complaint by means of a courier is the date of filing for purposes of those tight 30, 60, 90-day deadlines. Brings us up to the 1980s, basically. The other thing that prompts this bill is that the current statute looks to the cancellation mark, the postmark on the letter. And what our staff are telling us is that a lot of letters come in, a lot of complaints come in with no postmark on the envelope. The Postal Service seems to have stopped doing that in a lot of cases. So the bill would allow you to use different kinds of documentation to prove the date that you mailed or the date that you dispatched through a courier. Those are the main two changes that the bill would make. Other courts that operate statewide, i.e. the Court of Appeals and the Oregon Supreme Court, have similar rules, and ours would match that. We would also generate through our own legislative rulemaking authority some new rules that would give more specific guidance about the kinds of documentation that would suffice for proof of dispatch. We would do that in consultation with our stakeholders, and we have vetted this bill. Finally, I'll just mention this bill passed the Senate committee unanimously and the Senate itself unanimously. And I'm happy with that to take any questions that you might have about the bill or the court.
Thank you. Any questions?
This is only half in jest, but since you mentioned that you hang on our every word and listen for intent, I assume that the language is broad enough, mentioning courier, that it really doesn't matter what kind of technology might be used, just as things don't go only through the Postal Service, they may go through FedEx, as you mentioned, or UPS. We could have drones. We could have couriers that don't even use human beings, but from point to point. But you could probably demonstrate through payment, through some sort of payment device, that you scheduled a pickup for a delivery. So I assume the language is broad enough so that evolving technology won't interfere with it.
Ethanson, that's a very good point. We can't anticipate every kind of new development that might come down the pike. We have tied in this bill to an existing definition of courier service, private express carrier. That's in existing law. As that definition evolves over time, it's used for other purposes as well, we would evolve consequently with it. So we do want to keep up to date. I don't know that the definition that's currently in law of private express carrier has anticipated drone delivery yet, but the good news is that as that definition gets updated for other purposes, we will automatically tie to it under the language that we've drafted.
And one other question, since we do have a few minutes. I don't want to get too far into left field, but when I think about the future of how we pay for things, it's no longer only a written check or paper or coin. It might be a credit card transaction. It might also be cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. Has the court done much work on the issue of cryptocurrency and how it's used and how it might be an increasing factor in the future?
Chair Nathanson, I think the short answer to that is we have not yet dealt with that. I think that the agency tends to bear the brunt of those kinds of developments first is the Department of Revenue, and we're usually lagging several years behind them because they first audit, then there are administrative appeals, and then those kinds of questions come to us. We do expect to see developments on that, but probably after the department has chewed through it.
Thank you. Anything else? Thank you for being with us. Oh, that was it. Thank you for being
with us. Thank you very much for your time.
There's no one else signed up to testify. I'm closing the public hearing on Senate Bill 718. There's no other business before us. We are adjourned.